Well, this morning we begin the last of this series. You only live once. YOLO is a catchphrase that means go for it. Essentially, you only live once, so make the most of it. And so far, we've said three things. First of all, don't play it safe. Secondly, pour your life into relationships because ultimately they're the only things that are going to last. And then last week, Richard talked about knowing what you believe, right? Your beliefs define your direction. Today I want to say that you only live once, but don't just live your life, learn your life. Don't just treat life as if it's something that happens to you and you have to simply, you know, take it as it comes and react to it. That's how some people live, as if they're standing in a river and the current's crashing down upon them, and they're doing all that they can just to remain standing, to not fall and get covered up and drown. Sometimes that's how life feels, doesn't it? It just comes crashing down around you, and events just slam into you, and it's all that you can do to keep your head above water. Or to kind of change the metaphor just a little bit, you're actually facing downstream, so you can't see what's coming. You can't see that big branch that's floating down there and getting ready to run into you and cause some pain. Or maybe that you're just kind of floating along, letting the current take you where it wants to, even if it's to some dangerous rapids or waterfalls. You can do all of that if you want to, but probably better learn to swim, right? You can treat life as a skill that can and must be learned. And what we're talking about here is wisdom. Proverbs 3:13-14 says, "Happy are those who find wisdom and those who get understanding. For her income is better than silver and her revenue better than gold." So how does one gain wisdom and learn life? Well, someone once said that we learn wisdom by three methods. First, by reflection, which is noblest. Second, by imitation, which is easiest. And third, by experience, which is the bitterest. So just for a few moments before we gather around the Lord's table, I want to look at those. That's an interesting way of looking at things. There's imitation, right? We see someone who's living life well. And I don't mean financially necessarily. It's that they, they're content, or they regularly experience joy, and there's happiness in there. They have relationships that are long and lasting and meaningful, that kind of thing. That's what I mean by living life well. So we see them and we seek to emulate them either by consciously imitating them or just by being around them enough that it just kind of rubs off. Sometimes that happens to us, right? It's amazing how much we can pick up from other people just from being around them. For years, my family has made fun of me because when I'm really concentrating on something, when I'm really like into it and concentrating, I stick out my tongue. I do this. You're laughing because you've seen it, right? Particularly when I was playing guitar in the praise team, and I'd come to a challenging passage, and I'd be doing that, or working on a guitar, or doing something. And most of the time, I'm not even conscious that I do it. It's just we get done, and I realize my upper lip is wet, and It's just a thing that I do. And so I for many years, our dad, "Stop sticking out your tongue in church," you know. And like I said, I'm not even aware that I'm doing it. It's not the only time that I do it. It's for as long as I played basketball when I was younger, it's amazing that I never bit my tongue off. Because it was, you know, I was sticking my tongue out. My upper lip was always wet. Let's just put it like that. So a lot of you know that my daughter Angela is getting married at the end of the month, and she's putting together some family pictures for a display. So I emailed her just the other day, some pictures, some old pictures that I had scanned on my computer, and one of those pictures was from my parents' wedding. Mom and Dad are there cutting the cake, and I've seen this picture many times. But all of a sudden, I saw it as if for the first time, I looked at my dad, and you know what he's doing, right? I mean, he's intent on cutting this wedding cake, and that tongue is sticking out, you know. So I sent it to Angela, and I said, well, I guess I got it honest, right? And she replied that not long ago she was putting together a bookcase with her fiancé, Eric, and Eric was laughing at her because while she's hammering, she's got the tongue sticking out. And Eric just laughed and said, you don't even realize you're doing it, do you? And I asked Angela, I said, does Austin do this? She goes, I'm pretty sure that Austin does this also. So I don't know. Maybe there's some stick-out-your-tongue gene, you know. Maybe it's genetic or something. But it probably just picked up, you know, unconsciously by imitation. It's the easiest way that we learn. And by imitation, I think we can include in this any kind of education, what people call book learning, you know. When you go to school or you read a book about something, you know, and you're just getting into whatever it is that you're learning about, for the most part, you're learning something, obviously, that you don't know. So you just have to take the word of the person who's teaching you or showing you or has written the book. You don't know enough to be able to judge what they say as to whether it's accurate or not. You just have to take it as truth and go with it. This is how you do this, you know. This is what something is about. They're the ones who have knowledge and insight in the subject, and they're passing along to you, and you're basically just kind of soaking it in, or not, as the case be. Because while imitation may be the easiest way to learn something, it's not the most effective. When people complain about somebody having book knowledge, it's not really a compliment, is it? You know, they're saying that this person has no real experience in the area, so they don't really quite know what it is that they're talking about. They really don't know the nuances. They don't know how to adapt when they encounter a new situation. And perhaps most importantly, they don't know what they don't know, which is the most important thing for any person to learn, is how little you actually know about anything. So when you're hiring someone, what do you look for? Just book knowledge? You look for experience. And this isn't just, you know, if you're in a supervisory position and you're hiring somebody to join your company. All of us at some point, you know, around the house have to hire somebody to come do something, right? So if you call a plumber, don't you want to see that plumber has some experience in doing what they do? The last thing that you want to see drive up to your driveway to work on your plumbing is a guy who's got a brand new van and brand new tools, and you know, and he's carrying a copy of Plumbing for Dummies. That's not a good sign. No. What you want is you want to see a van that's got some age on it, you know, maybe the lettering's a little bit faded, and the toolbox is full of tools that they've seen a lot of pipes. That's what you want to see from a guy. You want that experience. A couple of years ago, we were having problems with our dryer, and we have a home warranty, so we called the company and they sent us somebody to work on the dryer. And it's a nice guy, really nice guy, really talkative guy, and not too young, but he was young. And I don't know how many years he'd been into this, but he had all the gizmos and gadgets and stuff. He had a little, I don't know, he had a tablet, a stylus, and boop, 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 you know, making all the kind of noises and stuff. And so I described what was happening, and he, you know, poked around a little bit, and, you know, and then boop, 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 in there, and the thing came up and told him what the problem was. And so boop, 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 he ordered the part, you know, and then the part came in a couple of days later, came in and installed it, and everything was good. And, you know, and the whole time he's full of energy and he's excited and everything. And then he left, and the next day it was doing the same thing. So I called the home warranty company and I said, it's still not fixed. Would you send some other company this time, you know? And so they did. They sent another one of their contacts, and this is an older guy. Obviously, he had been around the block a few times. Old van, you know, old tools, nothing that went boop, 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 you know. He asked me a few questions, and then he asked what the other guy had done. And when I told him, he just kind of did this, you know. He said, yeah, that's what they all think it is when they go buy the book, you know. But see, he'd seen it all, but he'd seen this many times before. I mean, he's probably nothing that a dryer can do that he hadn't already seen. So, you know, he told me, kind of described what the real problem was, which I kind of heard as wah, 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 you know. And then he walked out to his van and came in with some little part, and in 30 minutes he had the part installed and the dryer was working fine. It's worked fine ever since then, you know. Now, the first guy had all the energy and the enthusiasm and the doo-doo-doo thing, you know. But the older guy had the experience. He had the experience and made all the difference in the world. Now, I'll tell you what the second guy didn't have. He didn't have the energy and the enthusiasm, you know. And it's not just because he was older. We all like to lament about how energy and experience are separated, right? How the young have all the energy and the enthusiasm, but they don't have any experience to really be able to know what's going on, while older people have wisdom and experience, but we just don't have the energy that we used to. And it's like, why can't we just bring those two things together? You know, the energy and the enthusiasm and the wisdom and the experience. Why can't we, you know? And like I said, it's not just a factor of age, of the natural drop of energy levels that comes as you get older. But see, the thing is that experience is a mixed blessing. Sure, you've seen plenty of the good, but you've also seen plenty of the bad. You've seen a lot of the stuff that would give you energy, but you've seen a lot of, maybe even more of, the stuff that just kind of sucks the enthusiasm right out. See, I think the issue with the older guy working on the dryer, like I said, I don't think it was that much about age. He wasn't that old, Chip's age, you know. It's all relative, Chip. And now he wasn't that old, but you know what? I think it was actually his experience that had kind of beat him down. I think he was getting really, really tired of following after some young guy and just fixing everybody else's messes. And that's why the little saying I said at the beginning, that imitation is the easiest way, but experience is the most bitter. It's the bitterest way to gain wisdom. But there's still another way. And it's the way of reflection. When I started this series 4 weeks ago, I mentioned a sociological study in which 50 people 95 years and older were asked, if you could do it all over again, what would you do differently? And they said they would risk more and they would do more things that would live on after them. And they said that they would reflect more. That they would spend more time not doing, but stopping and thinking and considering, and here's the key, considering with a certain amount of intentionality and intensity all the things that they had previously taken for granted. In Thornton Wilder's play, Our Town, the main character, Emily, discovers the joy of being alive too late. And after she's dead, she pleads to be able to look in on one day, just one day of her life. And she chooses her 12th birthday. She looks in on that day and she is utterly dismayed to see how little the people that she loves really comprehend the joys of life or experience them with any depth of awareness. And she cries out to be taken away because she can't stand to see it anymore. She doesn't want to have to watch anymore to their inattentiveness to life. And with tears in her eyes, she turns to the audience and she asks, does anyone ever realize life while they live it? Every minute? And the stage manager, who's also a character, says, no. Saints and poets, maybe. They do some. I like that answer. The saints and poets. These are among the people who spend a lot of their time doing that very reflecting that we're talking about. They spend time observing life and not just reporting life, but reflecting on it. Aren't too many saints and poets around these days, are there? Nah, we're too busy. The world's too noisy. Almost so much that it's almost like we fear silence and solitude. Like every minute of every day, there's the TV on or the radio on or the iPod on, the headphones are in. It's like we're afraid of silence. Maybe we're afraid of solitude also. Some people find it unimaginable to have to be alone like that. Jean-Paul Sartre said, if you're lonely when you are alone, you're in bad company. Sartre might have been onto something there. That's why a lot of people are afraid of loneliness. The fear of solitude, the addiction to noise go hand in hand, and the taste of new wine. Keith Miller tells a story about a very young boy who discovered one afternoon that he was all alone in his house. And the throbbing silence terrified him. So he began singing at the top of his lungs and beating a tablespoon against a brass tray. And he said that he felt that if I could only keep up the noise, nothing would creep up and get me. Eventually, his mother came in from the house from the backyard and she found him. And he said, I can still remember the exhaustion and the tears of relief as I collapsed into her arms and was released from my self-made prison of noise and fear. The psalmist in Psalm 131 says, O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and things too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. My soul is like a weaned child that is with me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time on forevermore. If you're going to live life, really live it. You have to slow down. And you have to shut out the noise. And be present in every moment. Now, we can't do that all the time. But you have to take some time. You have to be intentional about it. I know some people who regularly take some time off. Maybe it's just a day. But so I know some people who will take a week off every year or so, and just go away on their own private retreat and be there alone and in silence. And making room for the still small voice of God. Tony Campolo tells of the time when he was in ninth grade and went to this church. The preacher was a big bear of a man. Before the service, the preacher's walking down the aisles of the pews and sees this boy in there, and he says, "Boy, how long have you lived?" Compella says, 14 years. "Ah, that's how long you've been alive. That's how long your heart's been beating. How many of those 14 years have you truly lived? How much?" Campolo's like, 2 or 3 minutes, you know. That's why Paul tells us every time we gather around this table that we're to examine ourselves. I think oftentimes we think this is a time to confess sins. It is that, but it's not just that. I think what Paul is telling us to do is to be in this moment. To be mindful of what it is that you're doing. To don't let this just be one more routine moment in a lifetime of routine moments that you do and you don't even think about. I think he's telling us to think about what it is that we're doing. To think about what Jesus did. Think about what it means. Think about how it changed the world. Think about how it changes your life. Or not. But don't just do it. Life is too short to live without being mindful of every precious moment. So as we gather around the Lord's table, let me invite you to close your eyes and bow your heads. And I'm going to be silent. And let's examine ourselves. And let's be present in this moment. And share the Lord's table as if this is the first and last and only time that we get to do it.